Rosen Spurscast, episode 638. My name is Paul Garcia, and I am your host here on the Spurscast. Today's Spurscast guest is Project Spurs founder Michael DeLeon. In this episode, Mike and I will look back at the Spurs' last two losses, the early season DeJounte Murray is having, and the team's three-point shooting. Let's jump right into this episode with Mike. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Spurs are 4-10, but somehow I feel fine, and then the whole Thanksgiving holiday is coming around the corner, so I'm pretty excited about that. So, yeah, I'm pretty good with things.
You like how whenever the Spurs win, it's quiet on Twitter. There's like no mentions. There's zero mentions.
Is it ever quiet?
No, for me, it's quiet. I rarely get tweets whenever they win. I'm like, oh, okay, it's a nice evening. And then
there's definitely a disparity for sure. There's a difference in there. Last night was like, whoa. Like I got up and I was after the game, I was looking into it and I was just like, oh gosh, it's the crazy has started.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, as soon as they lose a game, my mentions get blown up. And then, I mean, for me, it's like, this is what Vegas said. They said 30 wins. You know, that's what the Spurs are trying to beat here. And so that's kind of what they're on pace. Well, they're on pace to get those wins. Anyway, let's go ahead and talk about these. Some of the latest games here. Spurscast listeners, those of you all that listen to each week, we know that I just recorded recently on Saturday. So there's only been two games since I last recorded. And the Spurs, unfortunately, did go 0-2 in these last two games in LA against both the Lakers and then the Clippers. So let's go back to Sunday, Mike. The Spurs are on the road against the Lakers for the second time this season. They're facing Los Angeles. They lose this game by 8 points. The Lakers were the favorites here. They were favored by two. They were missing LeBron James. They had Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis present. The Spurs did fall behind by 14 in this game, but then they actually fought back and actually got the game into crunch time very late in the game. But, you know, the Lakers then had one final push, and so they kind of got that win by 8 points. And so that does move the Spurs to 1-8 now in crunch time because they at least got there. Then on Tuesday, the Spurs suffered another loss here, this time against the Los Angeles Clippers. They lost by 14 to the Spurs in this game. The Clippers were favored by 8, which is notable because that's the most any Spurs opponent has been favored by against the Spurs so far in this early season. So the Clippers were favored by 8. They ended up winning by 14. You know, the Spurs were a little competitive in the first half, but then in the third quarter in the second half, the Clippers kind of just took over. They just had too much scoring power with Reggie Jackson, with Paul George, other players. And so the Clippers got it built as much as an 18-point lead, which is basically the third highest behind the Pacers and the Mavs who have had some big leads in San Antonio. And so they ended up getting the comfortable win. The Spurs really just struggled on offense. You know, they had a pretty good defensive night holding the Clippers to 106. It's just the offense wasn't there again. The shooting specifically, they shot just 23% from three, which I think was a season low. And then they also shot just 1 of 11 on wide open three. So just could not make it. Even if the shot was wide open, they couldn't get it to go in the basket. So, Mike, what's some of your thoughts on these last two games, or these last two losses for the Spurs?
Yeah, I mean, the percentages obviously stick out right away, especially when you're 5 of 22. I mean, one of the things I'm noticing is they seem to be shooting fewer. Like, I know they're making fewer, but they're also, it seems almost like there's some hesitation to shoot. And it's like you have certain players that were brought in to kind of lock those down, like McDermott and Forbes. And they're still, you know, those. And we talked about, I think you talked about Derek in the last podcast and him, and he's making like wide open threes. But other than that, he's, still. Struggling. He's bounced back in the last two games, but there's definitely like where they're not shooting as many. They're not getting to the free throw line very much. I mean, the difference, they got to the line like 7 times. The Clippers got to the line 22 times. And I was talking with Evan, and we were on that the open mic earlier, and we were talking about how it's kind of a trend I've seen this year with the, you know, them getting to the line. It was a little closer against the Lakers, but with a young team, that's kind of like par for the course, I think. You're really going to kind of expect that they're not going to get a lot of calls, and they're not going to get that respect just because they are such a young team. So those are two things that really kind of, I think, stir for me, especially the shooting. I mean, somebody's got to, at some point, start taking over with the knocking down some threes, because that's been a big difference maker and how badly they're getting outscored.
for sure. And I'm glad you mentioned Derek there, because yes, we did discuss Derek on the last episode. He was kind of the player who was struggling there, and he's had two good games here against the Lakers and Clippers. He bounced back against the Lakers with 10 points, and then I think he got 19 against the Clippers. So Derek's kind of getting back to where his normal production is at. Mike, you know, that's the thing, is like, besides this Clippers game, I know they shot 1 of 11 from wide open three. They're like actually been having some pretty good accuracy numbers. You know, when I was looking at their data, I think they're seventh in the league in 3-point accuracy. The problem though is they just don't take threes, and that's weird, because you know, when you have a pretty good percentage as a team, you would think that, you know, the players would want to take more, but apparently they don't. That's just not a shot, like you say, they kind of shy away from it. And we're gonna jump into that 3-point issue in a little bit here further in the episode, because that is something that I do want to discuss, because that can end up being, you know, a downfall for a team like the Spurs who don't have a lot of 3-point shooters on the team. All right, so you know, looking at these two losses, you know, according to Vegas, they basically were supposed to lose these two games. That, you know, like I said, the Lakers and Clippers were both favored in both of these games, so they went 0-2 of the Spurs. They're now 4-10 on the season, which is 13th out west, and they're on a 3-game losing streak. They're 2 games behind the Kings though for 10th in the standing. So that's the thing, is like, as bad as everything seems, the West is actually playing pretty bad as a whole for those bottom end teams. So the Spurs are kind of still there competitive wise with fighting for that play-in game. And again, as long as they're there, I just don't think they would go, you know, full tank mode. You know, playing all the rookies at one time, or all their youngest players until they fall further from that play-in game spot. They finally fall into the bottom 10 on offense. They're 21st on offense now, and then they're 12th on defense, so they improved there a little bit. The status of Jakob Poeltl is still unknown, basically. You know, there is some improvement since I last recorded. He's now considered return to competition reconditioning, so he's now with the team present, you know, on the road trip with them. And basically, Coach Pops keeps thinking it can happen any day when he gets cleared to play again. Coach Pop was hoping he'd be back against the Clippers. That didn't happen. And then you and I recording this, Mike, Wednesday evening. The Spurs have already announced that he is going to be out, Poeltl, for that game against Minnesota on the road on Thursday. And then just the latest on Jock Landale. He's still in health and safety protocol, so there hasn't really been an update on Jock. Any thoughts there, Mike?
I think they really... That's one kind of area of that they're missing is having Jakob back. I mean, obviously having somebody that's a rim protector, like a legitimate rim protector, that kind of hurts not having them, especially against some of the teams with traditionally big guys. Mm-hmm. And I think it hurts with the lineups. I know people have talked about even using like Keldon Johnson against centers, and I'm just like, I really wouldn't want to see that, just because it just seems like a bad mismatch. The Flandell thing, I mean, he didn't play much before that, so I honestly don't expect to see him sing a lot of time lately. But yeah, I think that's, I mean, I don't think we're going to see like such a huge difference with Jakob back, but I think he definitely, especially as well as they played on defense when he's back, I mean, that could really see their defense and their ranking rise a little bit in that department.
I agree with you there. I think they'll get right back into that top 10 status whenever Poeltl eventually does return. So now let's move on to our second topic here, Mike, and that's the play of DeJounte Murray. He's you know, despite the team, you know, not having team success, they are losing games. They have they have 10 losses already. DeJounte's playing very well, in setting up his teammates and scoring the ball. So let's dive into his game so far on offense first. He is scoring 18.9 points per game, which is first on the team, and he's the team leader in scoring on 17.6 shot attempts. He's collecting 8.1 rebounds, 8.1 assists, which is also first on the team. And then he's only averaging 2.4 turnovers. He's already had 8 of his 14 games where he scored 20 points or more. So he's already had 20 point games 8 times out of 14 games. You know, he doesn't get to the line a lot. You know, that's something that you mentioned there, Mike, that the Spurs just don't get to the line. And so DeJounte, you know, is among that group where he only gets to the line basically once per game. He does struggle there, 68% free throw shooting so far. He has increased his 3-point volume this year, 3.9 attempts on 33.3% accuracy. And so now, where do his shots come from? So 35% of his attempts do come from the mid-range. That's his go-to shot. We know that. 24% of his attempts come from that non-restricted area, which is that floater range, which is kind of like that very inaccurate shot range that you don't want to be at. 22% of his shots come from three, and then 19% of his attempts come from the restricted area. And that one's interesting that the restricted area is last because, you know, he actually shows that he has this, like, this quick little blow-by that he's been showing lately where he kind of just, like, beats his defender and then kind of just, like, basically, like, taps the ball, you know, right at the glass, and he's just, like, the defense is kind of, like, shocked by how quickly he burns them and kind of gets to the rim. And I would just want to see if maybe he can add more of those type of drives to his to his arsenal, because again he has the ability to get close to the rim, and it's just that, you know, a lot of times he's settling more so for those mid rangers and those kind of floater shots. Let's go through his accuracy. How's he shooting on offense? 45% now from mid range, so he's continuing to increase that mid range. It's almost getting automatic again. He's a really good mid range shooter, but again, at the end of the day, that's never going to be a shot that's worth over a point per shot. His floaters, he's making 40% of those. His three, like we mentioned, his threes balls at 33%, and then he's 70% in the restricted area. So again, he's shooting a very good number when he does get to the closest area to the basket. He does lead the team in drives right now, and 49% of the time he's going to pass the ball out to a teammate. So he's the main player who has to set up the offense for the team, and then 39% of the time he shoots it. You know, when he's on the floor, he's amongst rotation players. He basically has the best points per possession. He's at 0.255, and then even in the clutch, he has the best points per possession number among players who have played. So you understand why the Spurs give it to him, the ball in his hands in those clutch situations. And then you can really see that teams are a little worried about DeJounte specifically and trying to slow him down, because some teams have put their best defenders on him even when he's not matched up with them. So I'm thinking, the Milwaukee Bucks have put Jrue Holiday on him. Multiple times now the Dallas Mavericks have made Dorian Finney-Smith their best defender from the perimeter, guard DeJounte. And then even against the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Thunder wanted Lou Dort, their best defender perimeter-wise, on DeJounte. And then lastly, cleaning the glass says that when DeJounte's on the floor, the Spurs are out scoring 13.5 more points per 100, and that's in the 94th percentile amongst guards. So that's a very elite number right there. So I know it's a lot of information, Mike. What are your thoughts on DeJounte on offense so far?
I mean, this was a question we had before the season started, was who was going to step up and who was going to take that next step and then, you know, end up leading the team. And I think we have our answer now. It's definitely DeJounte. And what I like is that even regardless of, you know, who they put in front of him, the one thing that you can say about him is he's been consistent. Like,
yes,
his numbers don't waver a whole lot, like, from game to game. And I think that's something important, because that's been one of the biggest issues with the current roster the way it is like, Keldon Johnson will have a great game, and then, you know, we'll struggle. I mean, we talked about Derek White's struggles. Lonnie Walker, you know, will go off. And so you really need that one player that they can count on. They need a second player to kind of jump in there. But, I mean, the type of season he's having, man, it's kind of – you can't really find fault. I mean, he seems like he's definitely got to be in – I know it's early, but he's got to be at some point in the All-Star conversation. Spurs tweeted, I want to say this was yesterday, that he's the fastest to reach 250 points, 100 rebounds, and 100 assists to start a season in Spurs history through 14 games. And it's just like, I don't think you can really ask much. I mean, and aside from getting it done on offense, I mean, I know we're going to go into his defense too, but I mean, he's been solid on both ends of the court. So it's been really cool to see him kind of firmly take that step forward, kind of what I think a lot of people have expected to see out of him, and he's kind of like finally, you know, showing that part of his game that we all expected to see at some point.
The NHL season is underway, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has an unbelievable offer to celebrate the greatest sport on ice. New customers can bet just $1 on any NHL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. Doesn't matter if it's a one-time clapper or a deft deflection. However they light the lamp, you win. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play the huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in top prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN. Throw down $1 on any NHL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. This week, one puck in the net nets you a big win with promo code TBPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Yeah, no, for sure. And just like, you know, defensively, we kind of know what he does. He's just a really good player there. And of course, you know, he leads the team in multiple metrics here. Leads the team in deflections, leads the team in steals, defensive rebounding, really one of the best guards in the NBA at rebounding the ball defensively. And then you also see that he gets some of the tougher matchups as well. You know, it's not like he, you know, it's not like he has an easy night on defense, really. He's had to guard players like Jrue Holiday. He's had to guard Russell Westbrook multiple times now, Luka Doncic multiple times. When they played the Thunder, he was responsible for guarding Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And then when they played the Sacramento Kings, he was responsible for guarding De'Aaron Fox. And then the numbers show, they know the Spurs are playing well with him on defense. When he's out on the floor, DeJounte, the opponents are scoring 7.6 fewer points per 100 with him on the floor. And then lastly, kind of something you just mentioned there, Mike, you know, he's just playing really well. And some different models see that in their data. You know, when he's out on the floor, according to Cleaning the Glass, the Spurs are outscoring opponents by 21.1 points per 100. That's in the 93rd percentile amongst guards, which is an elite number to be in. And then, you know, ProfitX is a site that kind of has a model where they look at a player's career projection right now. And DeJounte, according to their data, their model, DeJounte is playing like an all-star right now. You know, at this, it's, again, it's early. It's only 14 games of the year. But so far, the production that he's bringing to the Spurs is that of an all-star. And then, you know, we just look at his contract. Yes, we know he's making $15.4 million. But according to ProfitX, he's playing like a player that earns $29.1 million. So I think that, you know, if he continues this, Mike, up until, you know, the all-star voting begins here in a few months, and then, you know, when it closes in February or January, whenever that is, do you feel like, because if the team's not having any success, it's going to be hard for him to make the All-Star team again? If he's having very similar numbers, but the team's kind of in the same situation where they're just not one of those, you know, top 10 teams in the West.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen that with like DeMar DeRozan in the past couple of years, where even though he had really good numbers and, you know, his assist numbers were up and everything else was up, where because of the, I guess, the lack of success, that hurt his case. And not only that, but in the Western Conference, like guards, there's like so many guards that will really have kind of a case for being selected. So it's going to be tough regardless. But, you know, I mean, that would be a hard snub, but I can definitely see where it might happen.
Yeah, so no, for sure. I totally agree with you. You just brought up DeRozan as a perfect example. And then I think something that we don't see a lot so far is like every week when the NBA releases their Player of the Week nominees and like who wins the Player of the Week. I used to get used to seeing, you know, DeMar DeRozan, and then in years past, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge. Even in those seasons when they weren't sometimes selected as All-Stars. But this year, you just haven't seen any Spurs players in those weekly nominees. And I think it's because of the team's, you know, record. They're basically almost like losing each week, it looks like, on the majority of those weeks. So I think that's why, you know, the players aren't going to get any kind of like, you know, NBA league-wide recognition. So again, we'll kind of see. I was going to say defensive team, he probably has a really good chance, because even though if you have a top 10 defense, you have a good shot there. But again, as far as all-star, I think that yes, he is playing like an all-star so far earlier in the year, but he may not get that chance to be on the team because of the team's success. They're just not having that kind of success right now. So DeJounte, though, individually is having a really good year so far to start this season. And then our third topic, Mike, let's just discuss an early analysis of the Spurs' three-point shooting, because we're basically now at 14 games of data here, and this is kind of a trend that has kind of hurt this team in the past, why they just cannot find success, is they keep losing this battle here at the three-point line. So when we look at, you know, where are they winning and losing games, when we just look at their overall numbers, they're basically scoring on twos. We're talking about paint and mid-range. They're outscoring their opponents by 96 points. But then now they're losing the three-point line by 84 points, and then they're losing the free throw line by 25. So again, that three-point line is starting to very slowly start to have a huge build-up where they just cannot, you know, as good as they are at scoring in the paint and things like that, the fact that they don't get to the free throw line, and then if they're not going to shoot a lot of threes, it's going to be tough for them to win games. And this is where we see some of these numbers. So right now, you know, through 14 games, they are 29th in three-point attempts, 29.1 attempts. Like I said earlier, they're 7th in accuracy. They're making 35.8% of their threes. They're actually a top 10 three-point shooting team in accuracy, but they just don't take threes. They don't get many wide-open threes. They only take 13.2 per game, which is 28th. And then their wide-open three accuracy has dropped. They were a top 10 team there, But after that Clippers game, going 1 of 11, they actually dropped to 15th. They're making 38% of their wide-open threes. You know, 8 of their 10 losses have come when they lose the three-point line in a game. So, again, we see 80% of their losses are because they just don't win that three-point battle. And then 46% of their attempts are wide open. The league average is 49%. When we look at – so who are their high-volume shooters? We know that Bryn Forbes, 56% of his attempts come from three. He shoots well. They're 43% so far. We do know that he's not playing a lot of minutes right now because Pop wants, you know, more of those younger players getting minutes. He also wants more players who are defensive, you know, have more of a defensive side of their game. Doug McDermott is second, who takes 55% of his attempts from three. He's shooting well, 46%. Here's one of the players who we mentioned earlier, Mike, or her you mentioned earlier. You said Lonnie Walker IV, 54% of his attempts come from three, so the team is relying on him for his outside shooting, and he's really struggling right now. He's only making 31% of his threes. Devin Vassell, 49% of his attempts come from three. He's making 40%, so he's shooting well. Player who we mentioned earlier, Derek White, 44% of his shots come from three. He's making 31%. And then, you know, DeJounte, Keldon, and then, you know, they only take 22% of their shots from three. And then Eubanks, Young, and Pirtle, who are their three bigs that they play, they basically don't take threes at all. So I know it's a lot of information. What are your thoughts right now with this team starting to finally, you know, starting to lose that big gap in three-point scoring?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's kind of eye-opening, you know, some of the numbers you put up, especially when, I mean, I think the wide-open threes, obviously, is definitely 21 to 28th. That's definitely concerning. And then where you see, like, the difference it has in the game is definitely real. I mean, I think, you know, obviously you can't control if a shot falls or not, but, you know, Lonnie's obviously the guy that shoots the most. I think he shoots, like, maybe, like, I want to say close to five a game or around five a game, and he's making about, you know, 30% of those. And so Devin Vassell, with his minutes, he shoots a high volume, but then, you know, his minutes have been kind of sporadic. And so that's one where I think a lot of Spurs fans have been saying maybe you sub in Devin and start that up in place with Derek White, just because he had been struggling a lot from three and making those shots. So they have, you know, some players that you would expect to knock them down, but then it's like you said, there's a lot of players that either take very few of them or just don't take them at all. I mean, I think like the Adios don't take really any at all, and a lot of the other big guys. So it's something that will continue to be fun, especially if it's as wide as it has been recently. I mean, that's just math. I mean, you're just getting out there.
Exactly. Yes. You said it perfectly there.
Yeah, you got to make those shots, and you got to find a way to compete.
Or you got to take them, basically. Like you were saying earlier today, you were saying it feels like they just shy away from them, right?
So. Yep.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to pull up last year the data. So let me see here. I got it right here. Yes, like you just said, it's basically math at the end of the day. And that was their issue last year. I'm pulling. Oh, here it is. Okay, so they last year they outscored a teams on twos, mid range and paint, by 256 points. They outscored teams at the free throw line. Now this is because they had DeRozan by 126 points. So they basically won paint, mid range, and free throw. But then they got outscored by 507 points from the 3-point line. So it kind of just engulfed everything that they were doing with the 2-pointers and the free throws. And so this team's even in a little bit of a worse shape because they're not winning the free throw line battle this year. They're just not going to win that with the younger players who don't get to the line. So yeah, I do you think, Mike, that this is just interesting to thought. You know, do you think maybe there's also this is just kind of continue to be a problem, the fact that their two top scorers, which are DeJounte Murray and Keldon Johnson, they just really don't take a lot of threes, and that's just not part of their game. I know Keldon's doing better now. He's making 36% of his threes, but again, he only takes those if he really has to. What are your thoughts there, that the fact that their two top go-to guys right now just aren't, you know, heavy volume shooters from the outside?
I mean, I think that's definitely an issue. I mean, that's definitely something that has an impact. If you look at the top two shooters across the league from teams, one of those guys at least is going to be a three-point shooter, somebody that knocks down that three. It's almost kind of like a necessity these days with the way the league is, that, you know, if one of them can knock down that shot. And you're right, I mean, both of those guys prefer to drive, and the three-point line is just kind of like where they start their drives. And so, you know, you'll see DeJounte take a step back every once in a while, or when he has space, he'll take it. Same thing with Keldon. You know, like, His percentages aren't bad, but then, you know, it's basically, you know, how much he's actually taking. And then, you know, if that number increases, like, how much does the percentage go down? You know, like, so that's definitely something, especially when you have other players who normally shoot well from three and just aren't taking the shots or just aren't making enough of them.
Yeah, so I agree with you there, and so yeah, I was really interested because like early on when the season first started, DeJounte was taking some of those pull up threes like when defenders would go under him on screens, mm-hmm. and I thought, oh wow, he's going to add that to his game, and then he's kind of shied away from those a little bit. Now that he's getting his mid range shot back, it's getting becoming a more accurate shot for him again. So again, I just wonder, maybe Lonnie eventually gets it together, maybe Derek White eventually gets it together, but even if they do, the fact that your two top scorers aren't really three point high volume shooters, I think that's still going to put your team in a very bad place in terms of trying to win the 3-point line. And then just looking at, well, you know, their wide open 3-point percentage, a lot of that responsibility falls on the shoulders of Keldon Johnson, Derek White, and Lonnie Walker, and two of those three players are struggling on those wide open threes. So Keldon right now, I know he's doing better, overall in threes. 55% the most on the team out of core players are attempted wide open, so teams are leaving him open on purpose. He's making 30% of those shots from three on wide open threes. Derek is shooting well on wide open threes, like I talked about this past weekend. 51% of his attempts come from wide open three. He's making 42% of them. And then Lonnie's having trouble here. 48% of his shots are wide open, and he's only making 25%. So Lonnie, would be one of the players that they would want to pick that number up. And then teams, you can tell, don't like to let Devin Vassell get open. They don't like to let Doug McDermott get open. They don't like to let Brent Forbes get open. So do you have any thoughts there on those wide open threes?
You know, the one thing I was kind of wondering about this whole time is that it seems like to me McDermott does really well off like a curl screen or something like that. And so mm-hmm. I'm wondering if they'd be served well by maybe running a few more of those type of plays for him, because he seems to be able to, it doesn't take him long to get into a spot and gather and shoot. And he seems to do pretty well from there on those. So, you know, I'd like to see maybe a few things called for him more, just because he's shown that he can knock it down. I'm not sure, you know, obviously if that's going to help, but it's something that might be worth looking into.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely something to look at. Like you said, featuring McDermott a little bit more and trying to get him. But again, I think at the end of the day too, like what you said earlier, was just like, I just think that the fact that their top two guys don't take threes as much, that can end up just being a problem overall. So again, that'll be something to watch, Spurscast listeners, is if the Spurs, they're number two in scoring in the paint, as long as, even though all that's hanging together, if they're just not taking threes and like Mike said earlier, it's just math at the end of the day. And so if they end up starting to lose that 3-point line continually, we do see that 80% of the losses are coming from losing the 3-point line. All right, so before we wrap up this episode, don't forget to visit ProjectSpurs.com. Benjamin Bornstein is getting ready for the draft with his latest piece called Prospect Watching Tank for Banchero is in full swing. There's a game-by-game analysis by Stephen Michael whenever the Spurs play. Mike, you like you mentioned earlier, you have the new thing on Twitter called the Spurs Open Mic, so make sure to check that out, Spurscast listeners. Follow Mike, and then whenever he does the Spurs Open Mics, make sure you join and listen in to his analysis and his conversations. Rocky Garza Jr., he continues to preview the upcoming games of the week. And then Evan Townsend has his latest piece called The New Faces of the Austin Spurs. Thanks to Mike for joining me here on the Spurscast and for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.